tidied up beautifully by Gunston. Forward handball to Archie, and then to the side to Hipwood. And the build is better, but the kick is warped. It may not matter. McCluggage will walk in a second. Danaher plenty to do in the air. It took three to bring it to the ground, which meant underneath there were lines everywhere. And Robertson helps himself to a fine snapping goal. Cameron kept it going. Bailey goes baseline, and Brisbane has another goal. Charlie Cameron removed himself from Michael Annie and has set up McCarthy on the fly off the left. Brisbane's response was absolutely superb. McCarthy habitually where he needs to be. Onto the left. Charlie's there again. Did he get a toe on it? It's a goal anyway. Goals are there for Wilmot. Brushed whatever was in his right aside. And Brisbane are starting to crank it up at the gap. The Lions are at their dynamic best in the third. And it's spreading around the gap. All or nothing for the Adelaide Crows. Berry sinks the kick. It's Danaher. What a time. What a time for Joe Danaher. And that might do. Sweet relief.
Another close encounter with a team scrapping for a position in the top eight. And we've finally managed to secure that elusive second spot on the ladder that has been up for grabs time after time over the last couple of months. A 6-point win against the Crows, who a lot of people are saying are the best team outside the eight, and it's hard to disagree. Brisbane marches on with another win at the Gabba, 10 from 10, perfect record so far with one to come against the Saints, who have managed to net themselves a pretty decent win against the Tigers this afternoon. Patrick joins me again, of course, because it is the Brisbane Lions fan cast with Patrick and JB. How did you find the game? You watched it on delay in a weird turn of events.
Yeah, it was weird. I had my brother arriving from Germany and haven't been able to watch a game of footy with him for probably the better part of 10 years. So thought I might as well just wait and watch it with him because it's a fun thing to do. So that's what we did at about, I don't know, 10 or something, 10:30.
Oof.
Brilliant.
Obviously very, very butt clenching towards the end there. I sat in complete silence for a large part of the last quarter, and the relief came forward when the siren went out. Well, I think once Joey took that mark out on the wing, a lot of people seemed to know we were home. But yeah, once that siren went, a lot of relief from around the stadium, because over the last 4 weeks, I mean, the outlier being the spanking from the Suns, it's been pretty close. We had 1 point against Melbourne, 11 against Geelong, a couple of points against Freo, and then 6 against the Crows. So our last 3 wins have only amassed a total of 20 points.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's good. And as we were saying before we were recording, there's a couple of ways you can look at this the last couple of weeks. And, you know, the glass half empty side is generally the one I take as a default, because I'm a pretty cynical person by nature, is that we're not playing our best footy. Our midfield is looking a little bit lackluster, and our defensive structures seem to be dropping away a little bit. And heading into finals, there's a lot of question marks in the way we're going about our footy. The positive spin, the glass half full, is that, you know, the last 2 weeks especially, we've come up against teams that are essentially playing elimination finals, scrapping for a spot in the eight. They're both, you know, aside from being well in the bottom half of the ladder, the way they play their footy when they're at their best doesn't suggest it. And they, both teams, Freo and Adelaide, played pretty good footy over the last fortnight, and they wanted that win just as much as we did, obviously. I mean, as much as we want top two, they are scrapping for a spot in the eight. And we've seen Freo, what they've done to Geelong in Geelong, Melbourne at the MCG. And on the other hand, Adelaide has pushed Collingwood to the limit, and Melbourne as well at the MCG. So we know what sort of footy they can play. So I guess it is good to get away with a win, and that's the sort of footy we can expect in finals, is those hard-fought, grind-out, close games. So maybe it is good preparation. I don't know.
It seems like you and I have had a bit of a role reversal in the past kind of week or two, where I'm definitely looking at it in more of like a larger picture situation. Like, yeah, there are definitely regrets on the season, and, you know, had we shown up against Hawthorn, or had we shown up against the Suns, or closed out the deal in against Melbourne, like, yeah, those are some pretty glaring sliding doors Damian Barrett moments. But you know, when you know you mentioned there, like, coming up against Fremantle after they just beaten Geelong at Cardinia, and then Adelaide were in some pretty good form coming into us after the showdown win and then absolutely spanking Gold Coast. So, yeah, form, when you look at it, like, again, it was another situation of a game where at about maybe not three-quarter time because we were looking pretty home and dry there, but about halfway through or, you know, when we're three goals down, you're thinking, just get the job done. And that's sort of where I was coming from in a larger sense. You know, we've got two games left and if we win both of those games, we can get a home qualifying final, which was really unlikely, along, you know, even at the time where those dropped games happened. So interesting. Just got to keep winning games.
We do, and we face a very tough test this Friday night. Collingwood down in Melbourne, albeit without their, arguably, their two most important players in Darcy Moore and Nick Dacos. But, you know, we saw on Friday night, as soon as Darcy Moore went down, Collingwood kicked into gear and piled on goals against Geelong, and obviously they got away with the win in the end. So, I mean, Geelong went out Hawkins and Blitzarves and a couple of players. I think Gary Rowan went out for them during the game as well, and so that had an effect on the whole thing. But, you know, we know...
It was a bit of an odd game, that one. It sort of didn't really follow a great deal of rhyme or reason kind of around. It just... Geelong kind of played well for a quarter and then for the last 10 minutes, and that was sort of more or less that, but they piled on scores quickly. I think it was actually interesting listening to Chris Scott before the game. He sort of, I don't know whether it was a backhanded compliment to Collingwood, but he was sort of asked, like, do you prepare for Collingwood as if it's their best team, even though they're missing Dacos at the time? And he said, in every Collingwood game, they give you a chance, or, you know, and he phrased it in, well, that's how I read it, but he phrased it in the terms of, like, they'll always bring their best at some point during the game, which to me is sort of like, yeah, they give you a chance. So just kind of goes to show, I didn't think Geelong were particularly good at all, and they pushed him pretty far. So food for thought.
Well, I mean, that's still a number of days away, so we'll have to wait and see how we go with that. Let's do what we do, go back to the beginning and our changes for the team. Big O comes back in, Kitty still a week off. I really thought Daniel Rich was going to get a farewell game this week with Kitty still being out. I thought Pryor would make way for Richie to have a home game in front of the Gabba crowd to have a bit of a see you later. And, you know, potentially that might happen in front of the Saints, but... Also, potentially, we just won't see Daniel Rich again. So, that's something to consider. Dev comes into the starting 22, which I was a big fan of.
It was interesting. Last week, we very much spoke of, you know, how can we just sort of cram Dev Rob into the team? And Fletcher went to the tactical sub bench, which, you know, proved to be effective in this game.
Yeah, Fags' hand was forced and had to activate the sub due to an MCL injury from Jack Gunston, which we'll get to. I guess there's a bit of a discussion to be had about the forward structure and, you know, what the move is forward, because we've seen both iterations, the three tall forwards and the two tall forwards, work in different ways across the season. So there's a discussion to be had there a little bit later on in the show, but good to see Chuck back to somewhere near his best. I mean, obviously a blistering third quarter, which sort of gave us a platform to get the win from. But yeah, that first quarter, they were getting the ball out of the middle fairly easily. They were moving the ball fairly easily and getting the ball out of their defensive 50 fairly easily. So that's what I mean at the start, where there's a lot of things that sort of aren't really clicking and dialed in when we need them to be. So that defensive structure and those forward half turnovers, which we've been quite good at various points throughout the season, they seem to be dropping off over the last couple of weeks. And the midfield is a bit of a question. Some of the defensive efforts from Lachie Neale in particular.
Yeah, it was an interesting start to the game. It looked a bit sleepy and it looked like our just what we planned didn't quite work. And it's interesting to note Adelaide coming up with three pretty like bona fide talls in Thrillhouse, Fogarty and Tex Walker. So it's like between the three of them, it really occupies each one of our guys, which sort of made the zoning off difficult and gave them some pretty good entries early on in the game. But once we kind of clicked into gear, particularly for like the latter half of the first quarter and then through the sort of second and third quarters, it was pretty decent football.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shootout for a big stretch as well. It was sort of goal for goal for a lot of it. And I think in the third quarter, we sort of kicked two or three in a row, and it was sort of like, whoa, you know, this could be it here. This could be the break we need, because it's been a minute since either team's been able to put two in a row in.
Yeah, so in the third quarter, we put four in a row, and then they kicked two pretty quick back, and then we finished out the quarter with two more. So more or less the largest kind of lead of the game, but boy, it got a bit stressful towards the end.
Certainly did. It certainly did, and I wouldn't mind not that for I wouldn't mind a week off that. But
is it a grand master plan of just like, because I, you know, I spoke in the Melbourne game, I was very scathing of the idea of like, we're a front half team, and to invite pressure and play out of the back half does not really bring any kind of like it's not what we're good at, so don't do it. Are they trying to drill it into the team and force them to do it like some sort of weird masochistic morbid lunacy train? Is that what they're doing?
I'd really hope that this is not by design, and that it is just serendipitous that we are sort of getting this practice in before finals, because it is a good experience to have, having the experience in those close games. But yeah, for large swathes of that last quarter, we could just not get the ball in our half of the ground whatsoever. It just kept coming back and back and back. And, you know, thankfully, that experience against Melbourne and over the last couple of weeks, we've been able to put it into practice and kill the ball without having to, well, obviously without having Jack Gunston drop behind the ball. But to be able to effectively kill the clock without dumping it down the line. And there were a couple of times where Darcy Wilmot did do that, but, you know, it wasn't to the same sort of detriment when Max Gawn isn't there waiting to gobble it up.
Yeah, it was, I felt really bad because, you know, right at the end, I think they might have kicked one out on the full, or we got a mark or a free kick in the back pocket, and the ball went to Jared Berry. It was like, and the free kick was taken, and I was like, this is where they need to work and work off someone and find a cheap kick. It went to Berry, and then he tried to do the right thing and turned it over, and I was like, God damn it. Like, that's the worst kind of reinforcement for doing the right thing. It just like, just kind of screwed up. Berry had a little bit of a nightmare, like just some moments really kind of tainted his game, which was a bit of a shame because he was largely pretty good.
Like the show? Make sure to follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms.
Big moment in the game. Gunston looked like he had his bloody leg like ripped in half, or almost. It could have been much worse, I feel. And he went off with what was later revealed to be an MCL.
Yep.
We brought Fletcher on and then kind of looked a bit smaller in the front half. 7-goal quarter.
There you go.
Is that purely symptomatic of the forward structure, or is that because we actually, the mids and the defense played their best footy?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
It's odd because I feel bad for Jack Gunston because I think that there's a lot of people that probably would have been celebrating that, which is like a horrible thing. I know I said last week that I was kind of not celebrating, but I wasn't exactly not chuffed at the idea of Nick Daicos missing a month of footy, so, or 6 weeks or whatever. So
I know what you mean. Yeah, it's like I'm not glad, but I'm sort of, it's kind of a good thing that Fags' hand has been forced and he doesn't, like, any loyalty that he has to Jack Gunston that people may feel is getting him a game each week, that's a non-factor now, and that we have to make a decision. And those weeks that he was down, he was out doing the training block, and we went for the two forwards with Cam Rayner sort of playing out of the goal square, which is exactly what happened as soon as Gunston went down. Cam Rayner went down, like, deep forward. We were winning those games, but not with ease, but like fairly good margins, sort of, you know, 6-7 goal wins week in, week out. We smacked Richmond. Obviously, we smacked West Coast, he was back for, sorry. But the games preceding that, you know,
it was a good performance against St Kilda, I think, you know, leading into that. It looked like there was a bit more like isolation because we've got some quite handy one-on-one forwards. Yeah, you know, we've got some quite handy one-on-one defenders. But yeah, like Charlie isolated in a one-on-one. Like Rayner's going to generally outmark most people, and then you've got Danaher and Hipwood. Yeah, I think it's probably a blessing in disguise that's like not very well disguised for the larger people.
Yeah.
Everyone, it's sort of more or less what everyone's been wanting. So that's sort of what we're going on with that. But yeah, it forced a reshuffle, and I think it was generally pretty positive. Still some questions of the midfield. Like, I didn't necessarily notice Dev Robertson like in as many centre bounces as Saylor Ashcroft would have been in. What was your take on that?
Yeah, Zorko was in a fair more than I would have imagined. Like, Huey's CBAs have gone up quite a bit, and Bailey's.
Yeah.
And Rayner's obviously attended a few. So I think that whole thing has just sort of been spread a little bit more. But yeah, Zorko's probably spending a bit more time in there than I would have thought. And I would probably have Dev in there just for the experience in those sort of instances.
I feel like it would be nice for him to actually play his position in the team.
Would be good, wouldn't it?
Because, you know, he's being sort of shoehorned, you know, around, and plays a lot of half forward and out wide and stuff like that. But, you know, this guy, albeit in the VFL, like, he's playing as a center and he's doing a pretty good job of it at that level. So I don't know. It's just maybe with you know, what I think, I hope and I think that they'll probably stick with the two talls. And with Rayner playing as a more permanent forward, I'm hoping that Dev Rob, A, stays in the team and B, gets more center bounce time. So, yeah, a bit of an interesting conundrum, but I think possibly for the betterment of the team.
I think so too. And, yeah, it's it is a shame that it has come because of a knee injury to a bloke that has been, you know, a very good footballer for a long time. Hasn't obviously played his best football this year with us, but I think it does give us a good look at a structure that we know has worked, and we're sort of not stuck with it, but like, that's going to have to be it now, unless Fakes decides that 2 weeks out from finals that we're bringing in Darcy Ford as a permanent forward, or we're bringing in Tom Fullerton. And I just, you know, 2 weeks out from finals to really shake the cage like that, I don't see it happening when we've got, you know, 6 weeks of evidence with the two forwards structure. And maybe there'll be a game, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's this week, where Ford is the sub.
Yeah, well, you stole what I said to you before we started recording. That,
correct.
You know, in he's done it back to me, hasn't it? Yeah, we do tend to get Fagan kind of hedging his bets. And look, I don't mind it, and I know that you and I have been talking about like the lack of impact from a sub and things like that. But when you are playing with only two talls, like, if your ruckman goes down, you are in trouble, like big trouble, even more trouble than last year. So I'm okay with Fort being there as a sub, given that we've got an extra runner and an extra player, you know, around or behind the ball. So that's okay with me. Speaking of not Fort, but Big O, he didn't have a very good game. He had a very fresh haircut.
He did, yes. But
you could set a watch to that haircut, but he did not play very well.
Nah, he didn't have his best game. He didn't have his best game, and maybe that ankle's still giving him a bit of grief. Maybe, you know, maybe. And another thing you said to me before the podcast, the flight from Perth, maybe that has more of an effect, because I've not been to Perth. 6 day turnaround. They flew back on the Monday rather than the Sunday, so that's an extra day less of recovery and prep and all that sort of stuff. So maybe that's all playing into it a little bit more than your average person gives thought to.
So I've heard, like, I don't have any experience in this, but I've heard through family members who've worked for airlines and stuff that at, like, Auckland to Perth is the worst flight in the world, is what I've been told.
Sure.
Because it's kind of, you're going, what, some 7 hours with a 6 hour time difference. And it's just like maximum brain destruction. Yeah, the idea of, like, when you're flying from Brisbane to Perth, you're like just flying bloody in a straight horizontal line. Is it longitude? Is it latitude? I can't remember. But yeah, you're flying a long way for also a lot of, you know, time difference and stuff like that. So I feel like it would be really quite horrid.
Yeah, I guess so. Once again, not having done the flight personally or being an elite sports person, it's really hard to put myself in that position. But, you know, a lot of players do talk about it. And I know on Kick-Ons they spoke about it as well. So perhaps, you know, perhaps it is giving people a little bit more grief than we like to think.
Well, like Lynchy back in the day, he never even, I don't think he's ever been to Perth.
Probably not.
Chronic fatigue, they used to leave him home because it was too hard on him.
Yeah.
You know, recovering from that kind of syndrome.
I thought for sure as well that, speaking of blokes doing their knees, I think everyone sort of collectively held their breath when Mitch Hinge, his knee went backwards for quite a while and remarkably was back on the field. Amazing.
Yeah, that wasn't a good look, was it?
No.
Interesting to see him absolutely bend his knee backwards and bend keys to get a big old spout of claret coming down his face.
Yeah. Yeah, not a good day for the X Lions. Having said that, they both played reasonably well throughout the day. So, I mean, a lot of Adelaide players did.
It's hard to go through. Like, I was definitely impressed with McAdams because I kind of forget he exists a lot of the time.
Yeah, they had the three tall forwards, but it was sort of McAdam was swapping out for one of them. So I think they started with Tex and Fogarty on and Thilthorpe off. And then McAdam came off for Thilthorpe, and then they'd have the three talls on. So McAdam was sort of playing that, I guess, Rayner-type role as a mid-size but marking, jumping type of forward. And, yeah, he had a great game, and Harris had him. So he'd lined up on McAdam. Leicester had Fogarty, and Payne went to Tex.
And very different animals, I feel, between McAdam and Thilthorpe.
Yes.
Thilthorpe?
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
I'm just going to call him Thrill House like I always do. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like that'd be a massive like, kind of style issue if you're Harris to kind of go from like just a giant to sort of some sort of running man. But, yeah, in the end, 4 points is what you need. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. 4 points is what we've got. And as I said at the top of the show, we've finally got that second position that's, you know, after that Suns game, we all thought was just an absolute pipe dream.
Luckily. Is it we're just playing the games and everyone else is kind of falling around with us, I guess, and we're just falling a little bit more gracefully.
A good win, good game, hard fought out, still a few people well below their best. You know, if we can fix that up, and obviously a big test this Friday. I wonder when they were looking at the fixture, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, and when they look at certain blocks of games, like I'm sure this one was circled against Collingwood down at Marvel Stadium as like, all right, this is the one, folks. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of attitude we come with on Friday night.
It will. Very much looking forward to it as well. Like before sort of speaking a little bit about the Geelong Collingwood game, but neither of them are particularly super strong centre bounce teams. Like that, you know, they have been, but they kind of haven't been lately. So it's kind of all three teams are sort of struggling. You know, we absolutely polished Geelong, but then with Ashcroft going down, we've seemed to have like obviously taken that step back in that capacity. But Collingwood, yeah, as well struggling. So it'll be interesting with two teams struggling in a similar way how they're going to kind of go together. So
it's amazing just how much we clearly relied on a 19-year-old kid for much of our midfield structures, you know, defensive aspects, all that sort of stuff, because it has been noticeable since he's been gone 3 weeks in a row now where it's just like, whoa, this is not the midfield we're used to seeing. So it's crazy how much we relied on a 19-year-old kid for so much of that.
It's kind of just like the glue holding things together a little bit. And, yeah, it's hard without it, really. Like, we haven't done a like for like, and we've been struggling. So maybe a like for like is the way to go. I don't know.
Well, I think Dev was that player, and as you said, hopefully he's just in the team from now on. Like he did just before the last final series, Fags pulled the trigger and said, "All right, JL, you're out. Dev's in." So we'll see if that's going to be the case moving forward here.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Have you got some votes for us this week?
I do. Yeah, I do. But I'm not sure if they're very good now that you told me that Harris is playing on McAdams. So do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm going to do something you hate and put an Adelaide player in there. But three to Klug, two to Charlie Cameron. And the one is a genuine toss-up between Laird and Dawson because I thought they were... And Matt Crouch. They're starting three in the midfield. All had really great games, but...
Well, you can't give it to Laird because that guy cannot kick.
Yeah, and for that reason, I'm going
to
go with Jordan.
Although, Dak, give it to him. Give it to Laird because he kind of won us the game off his own boot. So.
Nah, Jordan Dawson is getting my one. He had a great game, and Dunkley spent a lot of time on him, especially after halftime because he was having a clear impact on the game. His ball use is really good. Really nice to watch.
And Dawson was absolutely burning us pretty early on in the game. Yeah, I've gone three for McLuggage on his 150th, two early games since the occasion. It was a statistically, it's a great looking game, and it was definitely, there was some you know, kind of vintage McCluggage moves. The change of pace, drop of the hips was good. I give Chuck the two, and then I'll give O'Brien one mare that I thought just, O was made to look really average. So whatever, I don't know. One aside from that.
Yeah, fair call.
One to him and one to Link, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, Link's put together a really solid patch of footy. Really solid patch of footy. So interesting that, you know, Charlie back on the horse a little bit. Wasn't a complete four-quarter performance, but obviously that third quarter was sublime. And Fags did address it. You know, we discussed the idea that maybe he was carrying an injury. I sort of tossed up the idea that when he went down in that Melbourne game where he had a bit of a hyperextension of the knee as well, maybe that was playing an effect. And you said, well, maybe since he had his front fence knocked in, that maybe that was the catalyst for it all. And then Fags did sort of more or less confirm that in the press, saying that it sort of messed with his confidence a little bit. So perhaps there's something to be said for that.
Ding, 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 ding to me. He said, what, he'd lost a couple of teeth and had a fracture in his face. You know, I'm not going to claim anything about that, but I did say it last week.
Eric Hipwood, you've been a big one for Hippie this year and saying that his stats don't really tell the full story about the sort of game he's had. And it wasn't the case again this week. There were two instances where he had the ball on the 50, near the 50, and went for the selfless pass, and it completely backfired. There was a lot of missed kicks this week. Some of the ball use was quite questionable from both teams. But
I think the funny thing about one of those ones was that he like kicked it to someone, the ball didn't go, and then he won a holding the ball free kick like immediately from that passage play, and it was just like, okay, he's improved the angle slightly. His two behinds were arrow straight, just slightly offline.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, chipping in two goal assists. He's just, every week it's like two, which is a lot for a key forward. He's not going to be Grian Myers, but I did actually, so Grian Myers leveled up with Akimanis on the...
he did, yes.
You know, the most assists in a season. And I loved on commentary someone saying, well, Akimanis also kicked 55 goals that year.
Well, there
or
you go.
Something there or thereabouts. So it was like, oh, yeah, you've got 44 assists, but he also kicked, I think it was definitely above 50 goals. So
yeah.
Can't dethrone the king, can you?
No, but, I mean, I guess that he wasn't ever expecting to be mentioned in the same sort of conversation as Jason Akimanis. So I think he'll take that, especially as he grew up as a line supporter, I found out throughout the week.
What?
Yeah. And his reason was Grian rhymes with lion.
Do you reckon the name Grian is like Graham and Brian or something? Like, what the hell is going on there? Like, or is it actually some sort of obscure mental name that I have no idea what is going on?
I don't know. Frankly, I don't want to know. It's a horrible
name. Do you name your second born Grian?
I wouldn't name anything Grian.
What if he came to the Lions and won two Brownlows and equaled Akimanis' assist and goals records in the same season? Would you name your second born Grian?
Sure. I don't think I'm
going to... Verbal contract. This is not going to make it to tape, is it?
Oh, no, it'll make it to tape. I just don't think it's something I'm ever going to have to worry about.
Okay.
My goodness.
GB. Goodness gracious me. Okay, what are you doing? We've lost Big Jack Gunston. So what are you going to be doing this week for the lineup?
I mean, Kitty comes in, Gunston goes out. Are we a bit back half heavy with those? Yes. So I think Priz comes out as well, albeit he had a decent game, not necessarily with ball in hand. But I mean, obviously we can go back and watch that spoil a thousand times. That was beautiful. But yeah, his intent was there throughout the game, but yeah, his ball use was still a bit sort of eh. So where do we need a little bit of extra oomph? Kitty out. No, Kitty in, Gunston out, and Pryor out. Is it just as simple as putting Fletch straight back in? Lohmann had a good game in the weekend. We'll get to the twos in just a sec. He put through four goals. So if we do go for the two talls, then maybe Lohmann comes back in as well. Yep. Prior out, Lohmann in, Kitty in, Gunston out.
It'd be good if I got us to do the twos before the team changes because unashamedly I know nothing about the VFL this week, so had other things on my mind. Yeah, I think we're kind of in a similar situation to last week for me of trying to cram Coleman and Fletcher into one spot. And we all know that I really like Jackson Pryor for really not a great deal of reasons other than I like him. I thought he played with a lot of physical presence and was more handy than his stats suggested, but he is probably the likely one to come out, particularly with him playing cross half back and, you know, at times looking a bit exposed, but also that can kind of be circumstantial. And just Coleman's ball use, just you can't not have that in your team when it's available. So yeah, for me, Gunston out, Pryor out, and then Fletcher, Coleman, and then one of probably either Fort or Lohman as a sub, apparently.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'd probably go Fort, Fletcher, and have Lohman in the 22. So we're more or less the same there. It's just that combination of players. I just think if Kitty's coming in, we can't have Pryor in as well. That's too back half heavy. We've just got too many players playing the same position, so I don't think we can have that.
Very good.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
Tell me about the twos.
For I don't know how many weeks in a row, off to a good lead. Yeah, that got pegged back, and then we got ourselves a lead again right up until the fourth quarter. And then in the sort of last 10 minutes, Williamstown stole the chockies and ended up with a one-goal win, so like reverse of the seniors. Having a quick look at the stats here, Reese has had himself a bloody big game, 34 touches, one goal, 10 clearances, three tackles, not a bad little game. JL, same story, 32 touches, didn't hit the scoreboard, and Lohman with four goals, 16 touches and six tackles. So that's a pretty good game. I was just having a look when we were talking about Big O, and I sort of went, oh, because I know Fort went off injured in that Freo game. Did he play on the weekend? Yes, he did. 11 hitouts, but I don't know who Tom Downey is, the ruckman for Williamstown, but he's ended the day on 50 hitouts, and the next closest was Henry Smith with 19. So we got monstered in the ruck in the VFL, evidently.
Who the hell is that guy? Bring him in.
I don't know. Some hit-out machine from Williamstown. Fullerton, 25 touches and a goal. Jimmy Tunstall, 26 and 1. Darcy Gardner, 20 touches. Not too much else to consider there. Daniel Rich, one touch. Daniel Rich with one kick. So I'm guessing...
And what did he meet his gain to like 600? he kicked the ball the entire field and then was like, I'm out of here.
Not recorded in the VFL stats there. So I don't know why he had one touch. Maybe he was an emergency because they played that morning. So maybe they only limited his minutes and took him at like maybe he played a quarter and then they said, all right, well, we need you on standby for the seniors this afternoon. Or he's injured himself.
My money would be on the latter.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And there will be someone listening that knows the answer to that, and by the time this goes out, we may have the answers to that whole situation. But one touch in a game of footy doesn't scream good things.
Screams a bit of Neon Leon in a certain 2000 and various grand finals. Good thing to think about, really. Yeah, let us know that we're wrong or that we're right. It's beautiful stuff.
Please do. And not just about Daniel Rich, but about any sort of thing. Get in touch via socials, email, that sort of stuff. Did you see I forwarded you an email?
Yeah, I did. And it was, we kind of covered exactly that. So, you know.
Good. Yeah. A big shout out to Jordan who got in touch asking about the tactical sub, and he sort of echoed our thoughts. Basically,
I felt a lot of empathy and I felt sad at the idea that he's like, maybe my perspective is tainted by my first senior football game being as a sub. And it's kind of like, oh man, that sucks. Because I've spoken before about like being a substitute in like winning grand finals, albeit in a different sport, and it sucks. Like, yeah, as much as you want to be like kind of cheerful for your team or whatever, it is a bit like, I wanted to help.
Yeah. So, you still get the.
I find it weird that they do like subs in senior footy anyway. Like, I guess. What's good for the goose is good for the gander or whatever. So here we are.
Collingwood this Friday, Marvel, huge game. Huge game. And if Collingwood have had a drop their game against Geelong, it would have been for the minor premiership. We don't need to worry about that right now. But As we sort of touched on, no Darcy Moore, no Nick Dacos, two of their best players. Yeah, it's gonna be a tough game. It's gonna be a cracking game. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds. And then I could be sitting here next Sunday going, oh no, here we are again. Interestingly, we play all right at Marvel, and we are, I guess, the only team to consistently beat Collingwood over the last couple of years as well.
It's been a while since I think we've lost them, right? Probably going back to that weird Dane Beams game.
Yep, I would say that's it, because, yeah, we beat them at Marvel with the goal after the siren. We've beaten them both times up here over the last couple of seasons as well, and in that time, they haven't dropped too many games, so we've got their measure, weirdly enough. And yeah, we perform all right at Marvel Stadium, so those things are sort of trending in our favour. But it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a very tough game. You would imagine they had the riot act read out to them after those consecutive losses against Hawthorn and Carlton. They're going to be wanting to get back on the horse come finals time.
Yeah, so a couple of interesting things to kind of keep an eye out. Like, will Sidebottom be back? Not sure.
So, I think so. I would bank on it. Like, we should be preparing for him to be back. I think all the talk was that it was only a one-week job, whatever it was, a little foot complaint, I think, from memory, but could be wrong.
So Sidebottom back. I think some interesting things to look out for. Jeremy Howe, like, he's kind of swung back and forward in recent weeks, and he looked pretty interesting as kind of like a more defensively minded forward.
So, yeah, I think he's really good footy up there, and the fact that Darcy Moore went down in the first quarter and they still kept Jeremy Howe up forward tells you that that's probably where he's going to play.
Yeah, so I think he might end up getting the job on Harris, that kind of blocking role.
Yeah.
Jack Ginnivan came in and looked all right. Can't remember who said it on commentary, but just sort of said he's the kind of player that you'd probably want to see in your team kind of around finals, because he can sort of manufacture goals and chances out of nowhere. Hard to argue with that. And then, annoyingly, the one-week syndesmosis turnaround of Murphy, who I don't like, and, you know, that's documented, he played out of his skin and really rallied that defensive
group. That's crazy. A 2 to 3 week injury ends up being a literally no-week injury.
Well, I think between that and between Howe's arm coming through his skin and getting a blood infection, if we see Nick Dacos anytime before the 5 or 6 week mark, we need to be checking them for like bone doping. Is that even a thing? Like, surely.
Here's one for you. Here's one for you, and I don't think I've ever seen this in my life. Having a quick look at the match stats for the Collingwood Geelong game, and just having a quick look at Nathan Murphy, he's ended on -2 meters gained. Everyone else is in the positive in some respect. Gary Rowan had 4 meters gained before he went off with his hip flexor or whatever it was. -2 meters gained for Nathan Murphy is what he's finished on.
Well, the only thing I can think is that that's some sort of a syntax error, or maybe like the only way that's possible is from like a 50-meter penalty going against you or something like that.
Possibly.
I don't know, because we've talked about the idea that like, It's a line that goes forward and never comes back, but that's weird. Yeah, what the hell? Can someone please reach out about that? Because
that's crazy.
I'm going with syntax error.
Yeah, I would. I'd imagine there's a gremlin in the system for that. But yeah, funny stuff there. Yeah, I would say, you know, between Ginnivan and Bobby Hill, Connor McKenna and Brandon Starcevic are going to have their hands full on Friday night. You know, McStay and Majacek, and although who's gonna line up on the match winning Jamie Elliott? Maybe that is a Brandon Starcevic job, and then Kenny goes to Bobby Hill, and Coleman takes Ginnivan. That's probably more likely, in fact.
I think I think style points would say probably Wilmot on Hill. I'd say.
Yep. Going back quickly, Motti had a great game on the weekend as well.
He copped a bit of stick on commentary, which I found to be a little bit misguided, but you know, that's fair enough, whatever. I think an interesting one's going to be Jared Berry and Josh Dacos, because I think they'll go head to head.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I would like to see that, because I think if we look back at the Gold Coast game, we got absolutely destroyed by Ned Flanders, and like, he was coming in off the wing doing all sorts of dirty stuff. So clamp him and just put Berry with Josh Dacos, I would say,
who had a blinder of a game himself, Josh Dacos. Just reminding everyone out there that there is, in fact, two of them. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting battle in the midfield again, as you sort of touched on, with ours being a little bit below par the last couple of weeks. I would say that... I mean, who have they got rolling through there? Degoey, Adams. I mean,
Lipinski had a pretty good game. Degoey looked like he might have had a calf or some kind of slight complaint, so that could be a potential for exposure. I know also as well, Johnny Noble had a bit of a knock, so there could be some wounded pies out there.
Sure.
And this week should be bloody good.
Very much looking forward to it. I know there wouldn't be a Lions supporter out there that isn't absolutely beside themselves excited for this Friday night. Not sure.
Well, unfortunately, I have to go to a wedding that day. So.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. Nice one. So maybe that'll be 2 in 2 weeks that I'm watching on delay.
Yeah.
Which is not a way I like to do it because...
No, especially with a game like this.
Well, the thing is, I like sort of knowing what the hell is going on. Mainly, I just sort of sit and refresh the free kick count so that I can get mad. But didn't have that luxury this week and probably won't have that luxury unless I decide to, like, sneak an iPad into the wedding reception and just, like, smash it from there. Who knows? I will. And then I'll tell you. So we'll all know.
I don't know if there's anything in this. In fact, I do know there's nothing in this. I had the weirdest 5-second dream throughout the week where we won a qualifying final at the Adelaide Oval, which meant we had a home prelim.
Okay.
So that's all I
can... How is that going to happen, though?
Well, if we lose this week, Port win and Melbourne lose, then they'll finish second, we finish third. So I don't know. That I'm just telling you, that was the dream. We've scraped a win at Adelaide Oval and we got a home prelim. That's a pretty good dream.
It's not quite up there with like that weird, absurd dream I had playing a community cup game at Jindalee Jaguars Oval. You were there, but for whatever reason, Nigel Lappin and Jason Akermanis were both playing in that game, but they were a bit older. So it was like, kind of like, you know, current Lappin and like Akermanis with like the dark beard and the kind of like auburn fuzz. And Akermanis kind of like did that thing he did in the 2002 grand final where he like squirmed between three people and like sprayed the ball out before the Voss getting hit by Burns, that kind of thing. That happened. But Akermanis' foot completely come off his leg. Just the stud, the sock ripped, his whole foot just ripped off his leg.
Jeez.
And it was horrific. And Nigel Lappin just goes and like runs over and picks up the foot and's like, oh, Akka, you're always doing this stuff. So
you're always losing your foot.
Yeah. So I'd much rather your dream than mine, to be honest. But both are good.
Sure.
I got to send you the message where I like... I woke up and wrote it down because I was like, this is the most insane thing I've ever witnessed. Yeah, utterly, utterly insane. What were we talking about?
Just to rub salt in the wound, Sandy Roberts, the whole night, called me Big Jeff Brown. Jeff, did he? Oh, no.
We're about to get into a nostalgic player, I believe. It is that time.
That time of the week.
That time of
and
the
hey,
week.
And hey, look, I'm in a good mood, so I'm going to go for not exactly the most, I mean... We've kind of long forsaken the obscure nature of this. But given the week coming up and the fixture coming up, just one text message from Mr. Mal Michael.
Oh, bit of Mal Michael.
All the way to Jared Malloy. Which one is it? Is it a 2-for-1? No, it's Mal Michael for sure.
I thought you were going to go Shane O'Brien there for a second, or even an Anthony Corrie.
Could go Paddy Karnesis, or who is some other knob that went to Collingwood, Jack Crisp, Dane Beams. There's been a lot of them, hasn't there?
McStay, yeah. There's been a few.
Well, as it is, I'm going to go the one that came back the other way. So Mal Michael. He sure completely transformed our defense.
Yes, sir.
Completely. It's unbelievable how like you can have someone come into a defense that like every piece was there except that one, and that one came in and it did not really look like, you know, it looked like it had always been like that. You know, even like he was arguably like best on ground in the first half of the 2004 grand final as well, almost trying to will it himself. But his work in the contest, his like his toughness, his head over the ball, and yeah, that text message to Jared Malloy, thanks for the premiership, mate. warms my heart.
The one thing I mean, I remember plenty about Mel Michael, apart from the fact that he did the old, I'm retiring. Nah, just joking. No, I'm not. I'm going to Essendon. The other thing that I remember about Mel Michael is he was the bloke that was on the mark and about 2 yards behind Tony Lockett when he kicked his 1,300 goal when he took the mark just inside, obviously about 30 metres out on a 45-degree angle. It was Mel Michael's man, and he was, you know, a yard or two behind him when the plugger was out on the lead, and then he had to stand there on the mark and be part of folklore history as he booted through the big 1,300.
That's pretty, yeah, fair enough. I did know that, but I didn't remember that. Another part of football folklore history, he kicked it behind in his own goal from about 45 metres out.
And he rocketed it. He went like a big barrel as well. I do remember that. That was strange.
Definitely odd, and he was really pissed off after that as well. Another bit of football folklore history involved in the infamous Nick Riewoldt.
Oh, yeah.
Incident that I spoke. Next week, I'm obviously going to do the Scott brothers or Nick Riewoldt himself, just so I can continue talking about that. I reckon, I don't know if you've watched his open mic recently.
Mel Michaels.
Yeah.
Like, no.
It's from probably about 10 years ago, but yep. I'm the sort of like moron that like watches it because it's like, hey, recommended. And I'm like, hell yeah. He never won an All-Australian.
That's crazy.
And to me, that is like, it's not like a great sin, but it's just a bit of a shame because he was like pretty clearly, I think the way they kind of, they talk about it is like individuals had like better seasons in all of his seasons, but consistently over like the 4 or 5 years, particularly the 4 years, he was just like, if you took that stretch, he would have been the best by a mile. So a big shame for him, but he did win a Kenmore Bears Club best and fairest.
Oh, well, there you go. What's he complaining about then?
Well, I mean, both my brothers also won that, so...
Illustrious company.
I didn't win it. it was illustrious. I only, you know, I didn't win that one, unfortunately, so... Couldn't do it. Couldn't hold up my end of the bargain because I stopped playing the sport quite early and also played for Jindalee, so it was never going to happen.
All right. Well, Mel Michael, good shout. Like that.
He's a very nice man, too.
I believe you.
I'm basing that on like the memory of a 10-year-old. So,
great stuff. Obviously, yep. Collingwood this Friday, at Marvel, and then one game at the Gabba to finish things off against the Saints, who've packed on a big win today against the Tigers. So, I thought they might drop out of the gate, but they might have done just enough to. Oh, you never know. Still, that bottom half of the eight is up for grabs. There's a number of teams. The Giants have dropped out now, which is crazy. But Carlton, they've solidified their spot.
Bulldogs stumbled, which is satisfying.
Sydney's in. Geelong is looking less and less likely to make the eight. Adelaide's going to have everything go right for them. Same with Richmond, but I'd say those two are out of the race now, so it's sort of down to maybe 11. But even then, Geelong's teetering with that draw they had not too long ago.
You reckon Buddy Franklin's going to unretire himself come week one of the finals?
Maybe.
Watch that space.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? All the song and dance about the great retiring man, and it was because he thought they might not play finals.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
Well, okay, here's some Lions news, and that one you're definitely going to hate because it involves your mate Damien Hardwick. The word on the grapevine is that Dimmer wants Danny Daly to join him at the Gold Coast Suns. So...
I did hear that. I think it was broken. Not was it Caroline Wilson.
Damo. Barrett on Footy Classified. It's of course with the Lions' blessing. Is the stipulation. Greg Swan says no such contact has been made and sort of poured water on the rumours so far. But wouldn't surprise me. We did get him from Richmond. Whenever it was. Best part of 10 years ago, so it's not entirely out of the realms of possibility. I wouldn't mind a bit of a coaching restructure to shake things up a little bit at the end of the season, but I don't think it involved Danny Daly. There's others I'd like to see go before him.
Yeah, look, that kind of stuff I really don't know too much about, but I don't like Damien Hardwick, so he can sod off.
Yep, fair call. Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap this bad boy up and look forward to Friday night?
Clayton Oliver can't string a sentence together. That's all I kind of ascertained from this week.
Yeah.
Unsurprising, I guess, but still stark.
Actually, one thing I did ask you before we started recording, and I'm genuinely surprised that it wasn't addressed in the commentary box at all, is why our coach's box looked like an IKEA like display kitchen. It was very strange.
Yeah, there was like, yeah.
They had like a little coffee machine and stuff in the background.
A kettle?
I was like, what is this?
I don't know. But did they not like bring their like curtain to put in between it or something? Like just seeing behind the set or something.
I'd be amazed if that's what they looked like this whole time and there was just a curtain that hid it all. I just assumed it was a fairly sterile room full of laptops and people on the phone. looking into it.
I would like to put myself out there to be the like coffee runner for the coaches during the game, but maybe Fags's heart can't quite take it, so
just you be fetching him constant packets of PK chewing gum.
Oh, PK. Not great.
He's a PK man. He's old school, brother.
Yeah, I guess. That's like I didn't know they continued making that after about 1987, so here we are.
That'll do us for another week, I believe. We'll be back this time next week and hopefully full of confidence, full of hope, full of belief because we've just knocked off the Magpies by 10 goals.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!